step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air performance number 617. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by my coffee and stalwart co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. And as the pandemic winds down, we are still homegrown and pre-recorded. Stick with us.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
I know the depression's depressing.
The carols are still, the stores aren't filled.
And the windows are minus their dressing.
The children don't grin, the Santas are thin.
And I've heard a terrible rumor. No goodwill, no cheer. But we'll get a new deal for Christmas this year.
It is Wednesday, May 19th. On the show today, we have the Bottle Alley Theater and the Vortex with their production of Dandelion. And of course, Nicole and I will share all the news that we've read about Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, West End, East End, South End, all the ends, right after you listen to this song. Stick with us. Did you recognize who sang that? Who was Annie in that music?
Was that the Lilla Crawford one?
It was. It was your girl, Lilla Crawford.
Yeah, she was a really good Annie, man. I enjoyed that Annie.
You loved her.
I really did.
Is it Lilla or Lila? I don't know.
I don't know. You know, I've heard it Lilla and Lila, so I honestly don't know. So Lilla or Lila, I would appreciate if you let me know how to say your name.
Yeah. Hey, she listens to this. Let's get you to call in. So you know why we played that song that is from the 2012 production of Annie?
Yes, because they have announced they are doing a live musical on television again in December, and it shall be One Annie.
Annie Live on NBC. So that's kind of exciting.
And
I know that, pardon me?
No,
they
don't.
They did not. They did not announce the cast, but they did announce. Right. They did announce the director, the choreographer. I don't think they announced the director, Sergio Trujillo, who did "Ain't Too Proud" in Memphis and lots of other stuff. Paul Tazewell is doing the costumes. Jason Sherwood is doing the scenic, and he did, and I totally forgot, and I don't think I saw, and I need to see if it's available, The Wiz Live. I don't believe I saw that one.
Yeah, you did. It had Neo and everything in it. We talked about that.
I know we talked about it, but I don't think I saw it.
So you did, and you couldn't watch the whole thing or something. Oh, no, I enjoyed it.
That wouldn't sound like me. Yes, it does.
It was Queen Latifah.
I believe you, but I don't believe I saw it.
Can you feel a brand new day? No, that's going to be in my head all day, which isn't a bad thing to be in my head. That's okay.
Ease on down the road. Come on in. Ease on down the road. So are you looking forward to Annie Live?
I don't know. I don't know who the cast is.
I don't know who the cast is. It's true.
Yeah, that's going to do it for me.
I am looking forward to it. So I have not seen Annie on stage ever in my life.
I know.
I'm not surprised. But last night, and for us, last night was Sunday night, or actually Sunday during the day. I was not feeling all that well. And I sat in my comfy chair and I watched the movie of Annie.
Which one?
The one you like.
And with Carol Burnett.
Yes.
And Tim Curry. That's the best Annie.
And Rankin, I might add,
yes.
Who does.
Jeffrey Holder. I mean, that's just everything.
Yeah, you know what? I had to go. I Jeffrey Holder is such a wonderful, was such a wonderful talent. And he was best known for the 7-Up commercials. I think that's where most people saw him. But he has a very interesting career. And do you know where he was from?
I do, and I don't remember. My friend did a project with him. Oh my gosh, now I'm not going to remember.
I'll tell you, it's Trinidad.
Thank you.
I really wanted to, so not apropos of anything, but there's an airplane called the Trinidad that I really wanted to buy back in the day, but I didn't. I really enjoy the movie, and I especially enjoy Anne Rankin's dancing in that, and she and her, just everything about her is just amazing.
Her layout in the middle of the song, "We Got Annie," it's just mind-boggling. She's just,
And I must say about that movie, and again, I've never seen a stage play, but I was the creativeness around, and I forgot who directed the movie. It was directed by somebody famous. I can't remember, but just very clever stuff with, you know, with Daddy Warbucks working in his study while people were trying to kill him and all this stuff going on. It's just very, very, very creative.
So that movie is not exactly the stage version. Because like the character Punjab is not even in the musical. He's from the cartoon strip. So like, they took some of the cartoon aspects of Annie, what people knew in the characters, and put it into that movie. So
I've always wanted to see the play because it holds a special. And I know I've talked about this on the show before. In 1977, I was living in Galveston. I had one cassette tape, and it was the soundtrack from Annie, the cast album. And I listened to it ad nauseum. I always think of that. So, speaking of Anne Rankin, did you see that there's a documentary on YouTube about her?
I saw something and then it flipped up like in a feed somewhere. And then I went to click the article and I couldn't find it. And I haven't gone back to look yet. I'm excited.
It was in the Broadway briefing today, Monday. And it is called The Joy of the Work. It's a tribute documentary film about Anne Rankin, mostly as her role as a teacher, mentor, and inspiration. And it's got interviews with students of hers, and it looks just really, really,
really awesome. How special.
Yeah. And it looks, so there'll be stories, of course, archival videos and photos of unseen rehearsals and performances from the Broadway Theater Project. Doesn't say when it's, it does, May 17th. So it's already available on YouTube.
Today, which would be
today for us. Correct. So folks can watch that on the YouTubes, and there will be a link to the article, which was from BroadwayWorld.com on OffstageOnAir.com.
Exciting.
And there'll also be an article about the Annie Live thing. And I should see where that came from.
Yeah, they didn't even tease us on like when they're going to give us some casting or like.
They
anything.
Didn't. They no, didn't.
It was just
very
like,
odd.
We're doing Annie Live. Here's the.
And they didn't even really address that either. They didn't say casting notices will be coming soon or anything like that.
Which normally is like in the fall or in like something.
I think that press for all of these live performances on NBC and others have been wonky. I'm just going to say that.
Well, maybe if they hired a good publicist.
I think they should do that. Where could they find one?
I don't know. They could give me a call if they're really looking for someone.
So
you know,
much.
I love me some Annie. I'd be a good spokesperson.
I do. Sorry, I just took a sip of coffee and that probably won't get edited out and everybody will hear me taking a sip. So there's so much news about reopening. And I think since last week, I don't believe the CDC guidelines were out when we recorded our show last week. So the new CDC guidelines have come out saying that vaccinated people do not need to wear masks indoors or outdoors. And sure enough, this morning on the news programs, all of the there was no social distancing anymore. So it was very interesting to see the Today Show with everybody sitting pretty much shoulder to shoulder as they used to.
It's been a long time.
It was interesting to see. My mind went, that doesn't look right all of a sudden. But then immediately it did look right.
Even with Dylan being pregnant now, she was sitting shoulder to shoulder with them.
Yep. So the news is filled with openings. So I decided not to like go in and like announce every single opening. There's just lots of openings being announced both on Broadway and the West End. But one of the things I thought was interesting, and we've talked about this at Ground Floor Theater, and the talk is going around in terms of, you know, vaccinations and whether employers can or should require their employees to be vaccinated. Well, the Hamilton company has said that they are requiring vaccinations for cast and crew. So everybody backstage will be vaccinated. So I, for one, am okay with that. You know, actors work at very close contact with one another. So I think that's an important thing to do. And I know that not everybody agrees with me.
Well, what about the people who can't take the vaccination? So do they get exempt or do they not, are they just not allowed?
I don't know. I have not heard a lot about people who can't take the vaccination. And quite honestly, they don't talk about that on the news. So I'm
wondering, like, what about those people? I know it's not, a small percentage.
Well, they're also, I mean, on the news they're talking, I mean, I don't know who those people are. Other than people under 12 years old. And in Hamilton, there's nobody under 12 years old. So I don't know. I don't know who can't take the vaccination, but that's not what we're here to talk about. I'm just
wondering because there is a percentage that can't. So, and I know it's slim, but how do you deal with that if you're dealing with it as a whole?
I don't know. As I said, I don't know who can't take the vaccination other than people under 12 years old, but that's not what we're here to talk about. I am sure that there is, there are federal things that say that, you know, if somebody doesn't do it for religious beliefs, they cannot be discriminated against. So I'm sure there are policies in place to maintain people's legal status and others. So I don't know. They did not mention that in the article. But so Hamilton is going to require that for their things. And I must say that I need to do a shout out to one of the members of the board of Ground Floor Theater, Robin Richardson, who sent me this Hamilton book, which I was sort of like, oh, no, okay, I'll read it. It's a wonderful book. So it's a large book, and it basically tells some of the backstories about how Hamilton started, how it was created and all that. But interspersed with that is the libretto, basically. They have all the lyrics, and then the lyrics are all footnoted by Lin-Manuel Miranda. And he says things like, this is, I don't know hip hop all that much, but there's a lot of stuff that he wrote that is a direct link to other hip hop artists. And then he just, you know, says other little notes about why he did any particular lyric, which I thought's very interesting. So I'm enjoying reading it.
Who wrote this book?
This is the book. Here, I'm going to,
it's a beautiful black and white, but is that black and white? It's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm going to post this picture on our website of me holding the book in front of my face because I don't look good. And it is called Hamilton, the Revolution. It's written by Lin-Manuel Miranda and Jeremy McCarter. It's a big book. It's a big book, and it shows handwritten notes from Lin-Manuel Miranda and others. So it's very interesting. And they talked about, I thought of you when I read the section about the casting of Chris. I just lost Chris's last name. Jackson.
Christopher Jackson. I love him.
And although he was always, so he had, Lin-Manuel Miranda had been talking to Christopher Jackson about this actually during In the Heights, which Christopher Jackson was always in, also in. But there was somebody else that he had in mind originally for George Washington. I can't remember who it was, but it was interesting.
I was about to say he did have someone else in mind now that you say that. I forget who it was too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love me some Christopher Jackson. Oh,
well, you know what? Let's take a break and listen to Christopher Jackson sing, shall we?
Let's do it.
Yeah. And let's do from In the Heights.
Because I was like, we're going to do In the Heights?
Yeah. The movie's set to come out. So let's listen to Christopher Jackson singing Benny's Dispatch.
Check 1, 2, 3. Check 1, 2.
Okay, we're back. That was great. We love us some Christopher Jackson.
I do.
I know. Let's talk about the Metropolitan Opera, shall we?
Oh, Figaro, Figaro.
We're going to talk about Figaro. So, with all this announcement of openings, and indeed the Met announced an opening in September, but there's a likelihood that they won't open in September. So there has been, since last December, a lockout of IA, the Stagehands Union at the Met, and they're not ready to, they're still in, they're not in negotiations. You just did a thing of fingers clasping together, but I would say it's more like heads butting.
They weren't meeting. They were, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I see. Yeah. Sideways jazz hands. So they have made agreements with AGMA, which is the union that covers performers and others. But the IA, they haven't. They still have a lockout of the stagehands. There was a big rally at the, not close to the Met because it's all cordoned off. So they were, I think, closer to the street at Broadway than at the Met itself. Okay. But here's a picture of it.
I couldn't figure out why they weren't at the Met. Now that makes sense. Okay.
And I'll show it to the microphones. But so what they're looking for is like and I did not highlight it. I wish I had. I think it's like a 30% decrease in salaries for IA that would half of that would come off. But they're looking for some permanent cuts in salary. But I found this one statistic that the Met put out that IA does not agree with. But they said, and this is from the New York Times, written by Matt Stevens and Julia Jacobs. In this article, it says, quote, Peter Gelb, the Met's general manager, wrote that the average full-time stagehand cost the Met $260,000 in 2019, including benefits. The union disputes that number, saying that when the steady extra stage hands who work at the Met regularly and the sometimes full-time are factored in, the average pay is far lower. I'm sure it's somewhere between that, but that's still a lot of money.
It's a lot. There's minimums. Like, they have to have a 5-hour minimum, even if they go in to change a light bulb for an hour. So like, 4 hour. It's, I understand the cost of it all. I'm like, they're not actually crazy in what they're saying. I don't think they're solving this anytime soon.
Yeah, they also don't have an agreement with 802, which is the American Federation of Musicians in New York. So they're still, they have to finish negotiating with Local One and 802, which is 803.
Dun, 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 when you add it together.
Dun, dun, dun. So I believe there's some news from New York City Ballet.
So every summer they go to Saratoga Springs to SPAC and have their summer home there. And this year they are going back in person to Saratoga and doing it. They are now going to go back through their archives, and they're not just doing different ballets. They're taking a whole new look at it and doing like the best of Balanchine and doing all of his work. And they're taking the best and their costumes from the years and using dances they haven't done. This programming, I was so upset. I'm like, I want to be in Saratoga all summer to catch this programming. It's unbelievable. I just was so excited. So excited. They're doing, they're looking at Robbins. They're going to be doing things like Apollo, Jules, Fancy Free, Midsummer's Night Dream, and Sleeping Beauty, I think, is another one of them. I am so excited. I'm so jelly. I'm not there to go enjoy it.
Well, that's awesome. We love the New York City Ballet. So let's take a little break. And if I can find it, we'll play something from The Firebird, which is a ballet he did with Jerome Robbins.
My favorite one.
Well, here it is. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa
and Nicole.
You're listening to us on KOOP 91.7 on your FM dial. And as we mentioned before, we are pre-recorded. And though our listeners are not on Zoom with us and they can't see what we're doing, but you just took off your jacket to reveal the most lovely little spaghetti strap number.
It's my PJ top.
It's lovely.
Why, thank you. Yeah, I got hot all of a sudden. I'm like, it got a little warm in the house here.
Well, I will be able to report on this next week. But for our listeners, they should know that last Monday, which for us is tonight, is a cast party being thrown by Biden Payne Committee in person at the Umlauf Sculpture Gardens. And I will be there.
Are you so excited? Can I just tell you how much I love the Umlauf Sculpture Gardens too? So like, what an amazing place to have a little event.
Can I give you a confession? And I would like to do it in RMA or whatever that thing is called style. Are you ready? I've never been to Umlauf Sculpture Gardens.
I am picking my mouth up from off the floor.
I've passed it 1,000 times. I've always wanted to go. So I do love sculpture gardens.
So it looks, you know, when you see it from the outside, you think you see it. Wait till you walk in there, Lisa. It's so, I can't wait to hear all about the evening and your adventure at the Umlauf. So this is even more exciting to double hear about.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. They scheduled this long before this latest announcement, but it seems like it's happening coincidentally at the same time. And this feeling that a lot of people are feeling that the light at the end of the tunnel is getting bigger.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
The Umlauf is one of my brother and I, it's one of our favorite places. We've gone there a lot.
Well, I wish I had, but I haven't. I have to say, and this is not the subject of our podcast, but I've not gone to many of the museums and places around town that I should have. So I've not been to the Contemporary. I've not been to Laguna Gloria. There's a list of things that I have not been to and I should go to.
But here's the whole thing. Don't hit yourself on that, because I think that's a very common thing that a lot of people don't visit and play tourist in their own city. And I have to tell you, it's quite magical playing tourist in our own city. Lisa, we should challenge each other to do touristy things this year.
I agree. But while you're doing touristy things, I'm going to do touristy things.
You say potato, I say potato, but I should say, let's challenge each other and let's go enjoy our city.
You got it. So I want to talk about one other thing before we bring on our first guest. Everybody knows, and if everybody's not watching it, they should go to Sightlines Magazine. Jean-Claire Van Ryzen has a wonderful blog that she did once she left the Statesman. But she announced in Sightlines the companies in Austin that got NEA awards. And among them from the theatrical side, Hidden Room Theater, Texas Performing Arts, Tilt Performance Group. I was so happy to see their name.
Me too. I saw that and I was like, yay.
Of course, the Rude Mechs and Salvage Vanguard. Did I say Hidden Room? I believe I said Hidden Room. Fusebox Festival, Forklift. Lots of companies in Austin got NEA grants. So mazel tov to them.
Exactly.
So let's jump right into our first and only interview for this week. And that is a co-production between the Vortex and Bottle Alley Theater for Dandelion. And we spoke to Chris Fontanez and Danielle Grisco. And they talk about it. This looks like a fun piece.
Yes, it does a lot.
Okay, here it is. Hold on, Nicole. Let me just sip my dandelion tea real quick.
Mm. Ooh, how fancy of you.
I love dandelion tea. It's my favorite tea. Do you like dandelion tea?
Of course. Why not?
Well, it's a good thing because right here with us in the Zoom box is Chris Fontanez and, oh my God, I almost called you Gabriella De La Rosa. don't make me laugh. Danielle Grisco of Bottle Alley Theater's production of Dandelion. And I should also say it's co-produced by The Vortex. Chris, this is an interesting show. I have to say that even after looking at the website, I still have a bunch of questions. So I can't wait to ask them. Tell us about the show.
Sure. So Dandelion is a digital performance that we're going to run for 6 nights. It's live streamed through The Vortex. But Dandelion also has a kind of an interactive experience in that it actually takes the form of a digital auction in which we are auctioning off, I believe, 63 items of various occult and ephemera items that we have kind of gathered throughout the years of performances. These are things that we have used in our Farm Road Coven storyline for the past, 4 years that we've kind of held on to. And I just wanted to, have audiences be able to own this little piece of this universe.
Well, awesome. So we're going to talk about some of these items in a second because there's some that are quite amazing and fun and I want to talk about. But this is kind of an end to the Farm Road Coven series, isn't it? Or is it going to continue? No, Danielle is shaking her head, which does not work on radio.
That was a big, no.
All right, Danielle.
I was going to let Chris answer it because it's very much his domain.
No, this isn't an end to the storyline. We had always had plans to, they've been referencing for the past 3 years that there are 8 remaining members of this coven. And throughout the years, we've been being introduced to them and reintroduced to them as other characters have popped up in different performances. And we had always been thinking that one day we were going to conclude this storyline with one big performance featuring all 8 of the members kind of coming back together. And then that would conclude that storyline or not. Maybe not. Maybe we would keep going after that.
So. Whatever. It could be like a soap opera where people just keep coming back.
Right.
So Danielle, you play Morgan Moxley, one of the last remaining coven members. And can you tell us a little about the live performance portion of this?
Yeah, so it's really unique because we're still working in the virtual performance kind of landscape, but Chris and I have created these 3 really wonderful individual plays essentially that we've put together, and so it's 6 nights of the show, which 3 original broadcasts of the 3 individual shows and then 3 rebroadcasts. So each play will kind of be broadcasted twice. But they run the gambit. There's one that is, very true crimey kind of, intrigue. There's one that is very, horror inspired and very gruesome and wonderful. And it's a juicy story to tell. And then there's, one that is, I think much more of a romantic kind of perspective on how the coven operated.
So I watched that
really,
one.
We get to really see like a lot of the different perspectives on how this coven operated from Mox's perspective.
So is this, these are pre-produced videos that will be playing, or you had mentioned the live streaming. So is there going to be a live component to that as well?
They're pre-recorded, mm-hmm. And they'll be broadcasted. Each one will be broadcasted twice. It will be this performance aspect in addition to this auction, and some really cool backstories given to some of these items.
And will there be, yeah. So let's talk about the auction. Is there a live component to the auction? So will I see Danielle up on the screen going, all right, give me a little sold.
If you can write out a script with exactly that verbage,
I was reading that. So,
you know, the live component to the action is kind of like a partnership with the performances. The live auction part will run from May 20th until May 31st through the Vortex in a similar fashion to the Vortex's winter market, the way that they had run that. And people will be able to go in and bid and also read the unique backstories on each of the items, some of which were items that we, like I'd said, were items that were left over from various productions. We also had items that were crafted by BA Ensemble that were made specifically for this. We also have about a dozen or so local artists who donated pieces, all of which you can find on the website.
Wonderful. I would like to just take a quick sidebar here and suggest that for Bottle Alley Theater, instead of calling it BA, I would prefer BA. I'm just throwing that out there. So let me just tell our listeners, some of these auction items, they're split up into categories: books, art, ephemera, and cursed objects. And I'm just going to share one with the audience. May I do that?
Of course.
Uh-oh, I can't find the one I wanted to do. I thought it was right at the first one.
Did you have one in mind?
I did. I had one in mind that I looked at earlier, but I thought it was there. Now, hold on, I'm going to see. There it is. I pushed the wrong button. Spirit Box is actually one of the first ones. So this is, I'm going to read the description. It's a box that looks like it's got like waxy, dripping black residue on it. Just looks delicious. A small box encased in wax, believed to be the container of either a malevolent spirit or even possibly a demon. Box was found buried in Hazel Murphy's yard and was only revealed due to flooding in that area. Box could contain the spirit of grace. The house's previous owner, which Hazel mentioned still haunted the house, or even pie whack it, or peck in the crown, or both. Dun, dun, dun. But anyway, so what I love about this is not only is the stuff looks fun to bid on, but it's clever and creative.
Thank you. That specific item, people will remember that item from our 2019, I believe, production of the Rain Sessions, and it actually alludes to a upcoming production, which will be part of our seventh season, by mentioning the names of one of the demons that becomes important later. So it's kind of a parallel of the past.
Dun,
the
dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
Danielle, do you have a favorite? I'm sorry, Nicole, go ahead.
I said, I love it when it all ties back together.
Yeah. Danielle, do you have a favorite item that's up for auction?
I have several favorites. So Mox herself is a character that is very emotionally attached to all of these objects. And they are very much the world that she like cherishes and exists in. I personally am a huge fan of the necromancy box. It's this beautiful trunk and it's got so many pieces in it. It's got spellcraft and holy water and candles and it's got a coyote skull in it. It's just one of the most, and some great crystals. I could go on. It's an incredibly intricate item that like it's this trunk is amazing and antique and beautiful. I could go off about it. And Chris has heard me geek out about this item since he first started showing it to me. It's a really cool item. And like the starting bid is, it's just so affordable, and I'm excited to see what it ends up going for, because I'm definitely throwing my hat in the ring for that piece. It's
wonderful.
An incredibly ornate thing.
And Chris, what's your favorite?
My favorite item is actually a spiked bat that Bottle Alley co-director Danny Stetka Odom, who is something of a props genius, actually made for us. And as opposed to, as like with most stage weaponry, it being, you know, kind of gimmicked in a way for it to be safe to be on stage, this is actually 100% real. It is an actual bat with actual nails going through. It is very heavy. And it did require a little bit of research into the Texas Penal Code on whether or not it is legal to even own such an item. And it turns out that it actually is, at least in Texas.
Of course, I was
wondering that, and then I figured probably is here.
We don't know about other states, but in Texas, you can own it. And when you do say that, like, we are selling it not as a weapon, but as a object, curio, art piece, prop. And I just love it because it is the subject of one of Danielle's performances. It is extremely heavy, and it is very sinister.
To say the least.
And a good word for it. Yeah.
And I should just say that, you know, safe props are overrated.
We don't recommend that you put it into use once you own it, but
no.
So back to the shows themselves. So these are they already done? Are they in the can? That's an industry term. They are in the can.
Great.
It feels very strange to be done with like the performances. You like, my mind is thinking that like, oh, opening night is coming up on the 20th, and there's all this stuff you have to do to get ready for opening night. But it's technically, you know, it's already done.
They are done. They are captioned. They are ready to go.
Lovely. And they are all one person. Are they all starring you and nobody else?
Yep.
And Chris, did you direct these pieces?
I did. I direct the pieces. I wrote all the pieces, all of the narrative that Danielle is going to be speaking. I also wrote all of the backstories for all of the items on the auction. But this piece overall was created. It was a collaborative piece that myself, Danielle, and our stage manager, Amber Wilson, all contributed to the actual experience.
That's great. Now, you alluded that it opens on the 20th. So I'm guessing it opens on the 20th. How long does it play?
Go ahead.
I was like, who's going to answer? The performances will run for May 20th through the 23rd, with the rebroadcast being the 23rd to the 26th. But the auction itself is going to be live from the 20th all the way until the 31st through the Vortex's Rally Up account.
So where do what website should they go to find information about this?
So people can go to either vortexrep.org or bottlealleytheater.com. I had to remember about the .org. It always gets me. I'm always sending emails to them with .com, and they just go into nowhere.
The ether.
You should just stop that, Chris. All the cool companies are .org.
True.
it looks like, it looks and sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. I look forward to seeing them. I love that you're in the relationship with the Vortex with this. You've sort of had a really lovely relationship with them through this pandemic. And I don't know whether y'all were dealing with them before, but certainly during the pandemic. No, shaking the head doesn't work on radio.
No, doing this collaboration with the Vortex over the past year throughout the pandemic, this is our fourth production in collaboration with them. It's been a really great experience working with them. All, you know, we've got to photograph all the pieces at Vortex. We filmed all the pieces at Vortex. And I think that if there was one benefit to the pandemic, it kind of made everybody stop and for a second, and it opened up this creative dialogue between Bottle Alley and the Vortex that maybe wouldn't have existed before. And now we hope to harbor this relationship moving forward, even after the pandemic is over. And we think that, you know, people seem to be open to these collaborations, us and them, as well as the audience, both in terms of like with this, with our previous production, Wildcraft, with our self-portrait series. So we're excited about what does the future hold? What does that collaboration look like post-pandemic?
Well, wonderful. Well, Danielle Grisco and Chris Fontanez, thank you guys so much for being back on Offstage and on the Air. We love you like crazy.
Love you too. And congratulations on Best Director, Lisa.
I was just about to say.
I know. It's so awesome. Lisa.
Woohoo.
I will say thank you because that's what you're supposed to do. But thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm kind of looking forward to bidding on that crazy box.
That was kind of exciting. I know. I wish I had pictures. I was waiting, like, as we were discussing, for like a slideshow of the items to go up.
I should have showed them to you because if you go to thevortexrep.org, you can see pictures of all those items.
I know. It was actually, I went afterwards because I was so curious about what we were discussing. So it was a good thing I didn't have a visual at the same time, but it was exciting. It was funny.
Yeah. Well, let's take a little break. Let's play something that's got an occulty kind of feel. Do you have is there a musical that's got an occulty kind of feel like this?
There's lots of musicals like that, but I mean...
Name one. I'll tell you what, I'll name one. Let's play Talking About a Miracle from Ghost, the musical.
If she can make a living...
So there was an article in The Guardian saying the headline is, "We won't be bouncing back, the unsettling truth of the big reopening." It's written by Charlotte Higgins.
Is it Henry's daughter?
It is Enrique's daughter. So it's a very depressing article about how it's going to be hard to bounce back. And it's written a lot. They talk a lot about Andrew Lloyd Webber and his opening and how much I have a hard time feeling sorry for Andrew Lloyd Webber, but he's complaining about how much it cost him to keep his theaters running during the pandemic and how he's got to sell. He said he's selling his house. My feeling is probably he's selling one of his houses. But
selling off everything. He has single-handedly been the one funding everything. And I gotta, you know, we can laugh and make fun of him, but we don't have any people here in the States doing that.
Oh, I know. I let it be clear. I'm not making fun of him. I just have a hard time feeling sorry for him from a financial standpoint. I think he's doing just fine. And I'm glad that he's been a big advocate of getting through this COVID-19 pandemic in Great Britain.
We don't have any people here in the States standing up for us like that as artists.
Nope, I agree. But one thing that it says, and it's kind of, I don't even know that it bears saying because we've been saying it a lot, but they do say that when we come back, the whole idea of a hybrid online versus live thing is probably gonna keep going. So, which has been, you know, good and bad. It depends on how you define it, but, or how you're going to do it. I think that I would hope that the Zoom reading, except in, or the Zoom plays, not the Zoom readings, but the Zoom people that are producing for Zoom goes away. And it's more about live streaming theater live, but who knows? I do think Zoom readings allow people to see new works being produced, which I really, really like. So I don't know. What do you think?
I like it. I think it gives accessibility to people. You know, I talk to people in England every week. They're in their 80s. They're vaccinated. They have no desire to go to the theater, but that is what they do all the time. And they've been enjoying the streaming stuff from their home. So I you know, different strokes for different folks, I think. I never thought it was going anywhere. I always thought we would keep this hybrid thing going.
Well, you're as
I mean, I can't get to England and I can now see stuff. So I think it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I hope also, especially things like the stuff that comes out of the National Theater, they do such a good job in videotaping their productions. I hope we're able to see more and more of those. Also, in today's briefing, was one Dick Van Dyke at age 95. Did you see this yet today?
You know, I started laughing. I'm like, I can't believe he's 95. And then I'm like, well, my grandmother's 96 and coherent and doing stuff. So I don't know why I'm surprised at Dick Van Dyke at 95.
Well, and there's a wonderful picture. This is an article from the Washington Post. And he picks up a Kennedy Center Honors, and he's still performing. And evidently he's just still very, very good. Now we're going to leave with something from Dick Van Dyke. Do you have a Dick Van Dyke favorite song you would want to hear?
I mean, do we really, can we just play Step in Time?
Step in Time, Step in Time, come on, mighty Step in Time.
Step in Time. Step in Time, Step in Time, Step in Time, Step in Time, Step in Time.